TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 137, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
Peter from West Hollywood.
And Susie from Sherman Oaks.
All right, this week in the news, first thing I have is that Boss has been canceled by Starz, so only two seasons. So that's interesting. I wonder if they actually get, because the only reason I care is because I was watching first season. So I'm like, I wonder if they actually wrap that up. I'll have to look that up and find out.
I wonder if they would have gotten another season if he had gotten an Emmy nomination.
Oh, he didn't get it? Okay.
He blamed it because he's a conservative. Like, no, seriously. Seriously, he's saying he was red-listed or whatever.
Oh, no. All right. Down Abbey has been renewed for season 4 before we have seen season 3, but apparently the Brits have liked season 3.
And it was the highest rated season over there so far.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. And finally, Chevy Chase has left Community.
What took him so long?
I know. Thank God.
He basically almost ruined the show single-handedly.
Seriously.
So.
Ugh.
Does that mean Dan Harmon can come back? That's what I was thinking.
It doesn't work like that.
I know. I know. But I was hoping. Yeah, any other news?
But you see most of the episodes, right? Because I think he's in all but two.
Yeah, he's in the first 11 out of
the 13. And they shot them out of order, so they've already shot the finale. So, there you go.
So he gets to take his money and run.
Well, yep. Of course.
All right, any other news?
Larry Hagman passed away, I think, Friday evening-ish in Dallas. They were shooting...
85, I think?
He was 81.
He was 81, but due to cancer. He had a liver transplant, I want to say, in the 90s due to cirrhosis. But he managed to live, you know...
Quite a while.
Quite a while afterwards and was getting his act together. He had just become vegan, trying to beat the cancer. But when he passed away, he was surrounded by family members and Linda Gray, who played his long-suffering wife, Sue Ellen, and Patrick Duffy, who played Bobby. And it'll be interesting. They're not done shooting season 2, and the old-timers were the best things about the Dallas...
remake.
Well, it's not a reboot. They literally continue plot lines.
Sorry, continuation.
But, so it'll be interesting to see how they work that into the script, because they're going to be needing a really strong... charismatic villain.
Well, because it's the two families against each other, so now you've only got one family.
Well, you've got representatives of the other family. So,
before that, he was I Dream a Genie, right?
Major Anthony Nelson.
Major Dream a Genie.
I liked I Dream a Genie.
Me too.
I loved that show as a kid.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on with the shows. First up is Homeland. And this week's episode was sort of a setup, but it was very, very tense. Like, this is one of those episodes where nobody gets really shot or anything, but I was so tense watching it. Somebody commented that it was the best under the speed limit car chase they've ever seen.
That's true.
That's a good metaphor.
Yeah, so it was... the whole premise was basically... Brody has totally just lost it. Like, he's just so tired of being everybody's butt monkey, basically. He's just basically like, I'm tired of everyone controlling me. I have no control in my life. I just want this over.
Yeah.
And Carrie, of course, decides that her vagina is the solution.
She has a vagenda. She used Walter Bell's term.
Walter Bishop.
I mean, Walter Bishop's term.
Yes.
I was just glad that the lame Dana subplot really does have repercussions in the main plot.
Right. Well, because it propelled all these things. It led to his breakdown.
Well, it's causing his breakdown, but also the daughter narked out the dad's lie about Carrie.
Right, right. But I mean, all he does not need any more pressure. Like, I was like, please, because I mean, I like his wife, generally speaking, but I'm just like, he does not need her yelling at him about him having an affair right now. Like, he is on the edge of completely losing his mind.
Well, she doesn't even know about the affair thing.
Well, she's going to... I know, but she's going to... Yeah, she's going to assume it. Because why would he lie about Carrie being part of the thing unless he was sleeping with her, which, you know, wasn't...
Or wanted to.
Or, yes. And so, he's already in trouble with that. I'm just like, I like his wife, but right now, he does not need more people yelling at him. So... and then the, of course, everyone in the CIA listening to them having sex.
Oh, that was the most uncomfortable period of time ever to listen to that. And poor Saul, you know, he's in there listening to it too. It's like, oh, that's gotta hurt.
Well, you think Saul is very much like her dad, and he was just like, ew, I don't want to hear this.
I know. Oh, that was horrible. And Quinn, being the dork, he just like had to turn it on again so everyone could hear it.
Right.
Oh, that was painful. But I love how she handled it. She basically, she looked around, everyone was looking at her. She's like, so basically everyone heard, right? He's like, yeah, all of it. She's like, great.
Yeah, but she...
Like, moved on. What is she going to do, you know?
But she should have known. I mean, you would say, what is she thinking? But she still, nobody said that she was better.
And also, she picked a location that she knew the CIA would be able to find her.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so she shouldn't be surprised they were listening.
Right. And then of course we get to after the slow car speed chase or whatever, the slowest speed car chase. Then you get that whole thing about them not knowing what's happening in the dark on the highway, and then the helicopter. And of course Carrie's freaking out about the helicopter, which I thought was great because I'm thinking, yeah, it's true. You know, they don't have a tag on him at all. So once they take off, they don't know where he is. But I'm thinking also, can't they track helicopters? Don't the CIA have the ability to find out where helicopters are and stuff?
Only if they have transponders in them. Helicopters are supposed to have transponders so that you can control air traffic control.
Exactly. But somebody's going to have to know there's like rogue helicopters flying around, though.
I'm sure they disabled their transponder. If you're going to be sure. If you're a secret organization that doesn't want to be tracked, you're going to disable your transponder. So they don't know where he is. And that's the worrisome thing. He's basically on the brink of breaking. Mm-hmm. Just when the bad guys, or whoever you want to call a good guy, whatever, however you, because Peter said he loves Abu Nazir.
Yeah.
So just as soon as Abu Nazir grabs Brody right at his breaking point, that's a good thing. That's not a good thing. You have no idea what he's going to do.
Well, we'll have to see if the power of Carrie's vagina is stronger than the love of Abu Nazir.
The power of the vagenda.
Peter, what did you think? You haven't been talking. You weren't talking very much.
Oh, that was good. I love the end, Abu Nazir. I thought that was great. I thought the sex scene was well used because in the trailer, I was like, they're going to sleep together. But because everyone was listening, you had that whole dynamic. I thought that was pretty interesting. And I also like how on edge Brody is with the... with the first meet, I forgot what the woman who he basically
ends up. Rhea. Yeah, I was gonna say Rhea.
Right, I thought that was really good, and then obviously the big helicopter thing was a surprise. I was like, whoa, can't wait a helicopter! Like, you know, although that means, I guess if they just leave their cars there in the field, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, in theory, they eventually are gonna come back for them, so that's not a big deal.
I guess you're right. Yeah, I don't usually leave my car.
Like somebody's gonna tow them in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I think they're fine. All right.
So, yeah, no, good. I agree. Yeah, good.
Thumbs up all around, everybody?
Yep. Yeah,
all right. So let's move on to Dexter.
And awesome.
You start. Great. This episode was so cool. I have to say, as I was watching it, the first two-thirds, maybe a little bit more than that, I was just, like, watching it, like I usually do, and I'm, like, kind of multitasking a little bit, you know, the usual through it. But that last, like, third or, like, last quarter of it, as soon as you're on the balcony or on the patio with Debbie and with Deb, when she admits to him that she's like, I went to that stupid church to tell you I'm in love with you. I was like, I stopped everything. Like, from that point in, like, even, okay, that whole thing with them and then him going to the bar, you know, the gay bar, who knew, you know, to find, to meet with that. I was like, holy crap, this entire end is great.
Well, yeah, it was all really good. I was just like, holy God. I was like, these are like really, really good conversation. Very, very much the like, oh my God, they're all putting, all these characters are putting their chips out the on the table. Yep. Like everything's being, you know, laid out. So I really liked it.
It was really, the end, it ended just like on a bang, man. That was great.
All I'm going to say is, I had the inverse reaction of you guys with the whole, Deb telling Dexter that she was in love with him. Because last season, that's where I thought the show went off the rails. When Deb goes, oh my God, I'm in love with Dexter. And I was like, no, you're not going with the incest. And so I really, really hated it. And then this season, it looked like they basically erased everything from last season, which they did for almost all the storylines. Everything got erased.
And I've never seen last season. I skipped
it. Never
told me it was bad.
Oh, that's why you guys like this.
The reason I liked it, though, because I know you mentioned it, though, because you told us about last season, so I knew that was part of it. So when she mentioned that, my first thought was, oh, this is that whole thing from last year.
Me too. That's the same thing, because I had heard
about it. I knew about it, but the reason I was so impressed with it this time is the way it we had Brody breaking down on Homeland, and we got Deb breaking down finally on Dexter, you know, and she's just crying because she can't believe that her brother, who she really, you know, recently figured out is a serial killer, she asked him to kill this one person for her, which took a lot of guts for her, and she finds out he's sleeping with her and this whole thing. So she's just like devastated and she's crying, and then she admits what she didn't want to admit to him.
Right, and I get, like, from an acting standpoint, I thought it was fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I thought she did a great job. My problem is I hate that storyline.
I can see where Olivia's coming from, but all I'm saying right now is, you know, I thought that episode was pretty good. I thought the actress knocked it out of the park. I know you're really wary about the storyline, but let's give the writers some leeway. If they take it and it doesn't work, I will freely admit at the end of the season going, they shouldn't have done that. But at this point, I think it's fine. So let's have faith in the writers.
And to add to that, I would just say I didn't even think for a minute that they were going to go anywhere with it. I think that was just their way of basically saying, okay, Deb is effed up, if not more than Dexter.
Okay.
I mean, that's really what I think.
Point. I didn't think of that.
That's true, but I also feel like the other reason I resent this storyline is because they wanted it. It feels like for the writer's perspective, Deb has to be romantically in love with Dexter in order to not turn him in as a serial killer, versus being a sister's love for her brother to not turn him in because he's a serial killer. I feel like they were very distinctive in, she is at the point where she is romantically in love with him. That's why she's not turning him in. And that feels cheap to me. I was like, I don't know, man. I think the whole sibling thing is sometimes a lot stronger than the other.
And I think so.
I see what you're saying there. I could see. Yeah, I could see that.
That's the thing, but she mentioned, though,
and she was talking to him, and he kind of looked at her, and she's like, I don't even know why I said that. She goes, and then she even said, I don't even, like, basically, like, right now, as of now, when she was talking to him, she's like, I'm not even sure if I like you, you know?
Right.
So I think everything changed from when she, you know, admitted, because she told him, she specifically said, you know, I went to that church to tell you I was in love with you. So she was talking about that point then. And so you can tell that her feelings, no matter how messed up they are, could have changed between now and then. But that was to the fact that she was messed up big time.
I grant you that she is messed up. And Dexter, but now it feels like Dexter might be, now because that follows the conversation in the gay bar, which was awesome, by the way.
Really
I
good.
Do
yeah.
think that that, really that conversation was really, really good.
Really good.
But that made Dexter think about romantic love and what it can make you do. And it feels like, oh, now he's thinking, how does it make me feel about the woman that he's in love with now versus what Deb feels, and can he use that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, me, it felt like it made him think of all these things.
And I like that.
I kind of feel like that's kind of seems to be the theme of the show, is these really strong feelings we have, and then these people who theoretically are killers, you know? Because that was a great scene when Ray Stevenson at the bar was just like, you know, in another life, I think we really would have been friends.
Yeah.
And Dexter's like, well, you could just walk away. And he's like, well, would you? And it's like, oh.
Right.
Because you feel like, I do think they'd be good friends. Like, I actually, I was just like, oh, this sucks. So I was like, I think they would be.
Yeah, I really don't want them to kill each other either.
I don't.
They should go to Argentina together. but this is the last. This is technically the last season, though, right?
No, next season's the last season.
No, one more.
Oh, it is. There's one after. Okay.
Yeah.
Because then I was thinking, well, they could only go so far unless, like, what's her name? The girl who plays Deb, she, like, decides to leave the show or something, because he can't, because it's Dexter and he's Dexter. So I don't think they're going to do too much to jeopardize the relationship, I'm hoping. So I guess we'll wait and see where the writers decide to go with the brother-sister thing. Hopefully not anywhere beyond where they've gone. So
I don't want Dexter to be with his sister. I don't think they're going to do that.
Well, the thing is, what you guys missed is last season they actually showed them making out. But you find out that it was her dream.
They did push it for last season, which is why Libya is concerned about it. But that's why I think this time they just used it in this episode to just show... Like here's Deb, so messed up, she has a bow on top. She's done, you know.
All right, so let's wrap that one up. Generally speaking, I you guys both a thumbs up. Generally speaking, I liked it, but I'm concerned. How about that?
Okay, fair enough. All right,
All right, next up, let's talk about Walking Dead.
Well, speaking about messed up families, I love the little bonding scene between Carl and Daryl.
That was awesome. It's like, yeah, my mom, dad, such. Yeah, I put a bullet in my mom's head, dude.
That was real.
He was like, I don't like your comparison. Let me break it down for you. But I like that Daryl is looking out for Carl. I like that he's...
Daryl's looking out for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Daryl actually...
I was so happy that the woman is alive. I was so happy.
Yes.
Oh, what's her name? The one with the...
Carol.
Carol. Because they never found
her head. I call her headscarf, because that's all I can remember.
Headscarf?
And the thing is, she never wore a headscarf except for that one episode.
I always think she looks kind of like a cancer patient.
She does, I know, right? I know. She's
battered wife.
Oh, yes. She was the better wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really think that she did a. I'm happy she's there. I never thought she was dead. I was like, we saw her run off, and we never saw her again.
Yeah, we.
And this is the kind of show. If she dies, they will show you gruesomely how she dies.
Oh yeah,
with the remains. But it's okay. But I thought it was cool that as they're walking through that hallway, through that corridor, and the door's like moving, and they're just like completely dismissing it. Like, there's nothing there. It's like, it's just one of the it's just a weak, weak walker. It's not going to go anywhere. And then later on, they come back.
Yeah,
wasn't
good.
It the same room that she was in?
Yeah.
And that was her, right?
I agree. So, I was surprised, too, because I was like, oh, all right. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was great. And then we have,
the governor?
No, I was actually going to talk about Rick and the phone.
Oh, Rick and the phone?
Oh,
that was crazy.
Wow. His phone was crazy.
Yeah, he was crazy.
Well, that was crazy because he's gone.
Yeah.
Rick Grimes has left the building.
But what's interesting is he knows it. Like, once he got to that last phone call and realized that it was Lori, he realized, I've totally lost it.
Yeah, I mean, in the comic, like, because I've read the comic, in the comic, pretty much in one panel that he's talking to his dead wife, but... In the comic, they use that device as like a way for when things are getting really stressful, Rick will go to this room and he'll have this conversation on the phone with Lori. So it becomes almost kind of like a therapeutic thing. But I don't know. I'm not really sure if that's what they're going to do on the show. I don't know.
This was not therapeutic at all.
This was holy crap, I've lost it.
This is... Home Slice has lost his nut.
But I like the fact that... what's his name? Harold? Is it Harold? No leg. Who's that?
Grandpa?
Yeah, what's his name?
Herschel.
I like that Herschel, he's like, on this phone? He picks up the phone, and I'm like, is there a dial? Like, I want to know if he hears a dial tone. I don't think he hears it, because he puts the phone to his ear, and he just puts the phone back down. He doesn't really react. He's just like, why don't we just go out of here together? And he's really calm about it. And
that's
what
you do when you talk crazy people off the edge of the building. Very calmly, you go, sure, but let's talk over here for a minute first, okay?
Yeah, that was all pretty good. I thought that was great. And then you wanted to talk about the governor.
Why can't I think of her name? Marina Covarrubias.
Andrea.
I did not see it coming that the reason that she was so offended by the monster truck fighting / zombie bait, whatever that was, is because she really liked it.
I like that because it reflects back to back in season two when she got off on killing.
Yeah, but I think she is coming under the governor's spell.
Well, not just that. Well, obviously they were not in boots. Sex, I was like, yeah, of course. But
I mean, we know that Andrea likes to screw guys who are bad for her.
Yes.
Or just bad, period.
Right. And it goes with her character. And it's like she kind of convinced herself that she's a better person than she really kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like, no, you're really this.
But by separating the group and because she feels that she was abandoned by the group, when we do get the group back together, there could be a serious possibility that she might not side with the others.
That's true.
Because she's got issues.
Yeah, I know. But I think that if they can show how evil the governor is, well, because he's been lying to her this whole time.
Oh yeah, but
so they have. If they can show her that, then maybe.
But who knows for a fact that he's been lying? I mean, Michonne has really strong suspicions, and for good reasons.
Right.
But she doesn't know for a fact all the stuff he's done.
Merle does, and Merle's loyalty is not necessarily to the governor.
Merle's loyalty is to Merle.
And also to his brother.
Mm.
Well, and you know, I think for some reason, the thing I took away with Andrea and the governor was it almost seemed like she was playing him too. Like we were saying, yeah, she likes to pretty much be with the guys that aren't good for her. But my thought was that she was doing it because she knew that he was the one in power and that he was receptive to it. So I don't know if she maybe, thankfully, is thinking maybe a couple steps ahead of the game and is working and is doing this to get herself in, because he's the one with the power.
Yeah, but I don't know if she's that smart.
I agree with Libby on that. I don't think Andrea's shown any, you know, she's just kind of playing it by ear and,
yeah,
you know.
Going with the motion, go
she
with
goes,
the flow.
She goes with, she was with Michonne and played into, because she knew Michonne liked her, and she played into that
to
as
keep
long,
alive.
Keep alive, she, as long as Michonne was keeping her alive.
But that's what she's doing with the governor. She knows the governor likes her too, and he's the one with the power, and he likes
he's keeping her,
and so,
alive, and that's all she's going with. But that doesn't take brains. It doesn't take a lot of brains.
Survival instinct is not necessarily
a
solid strategy.
And that's not plotting a couple of steps ahead. And
fair
I think
enough. I'd like to see her not be just this, because you know we already have Carl in a hat. You know, do we really need her as just a two-dimensional character?
Yeah, I like
this
Carl.
This doesn't make her two-dimensional.
No, she's just simpler than you're making her. That's all. But then the question is, when she gets the group back, is she going to feel like the group is safer for her or this guy's safer? So that's the question.
And I have no idea how long the governor arc lasts in the comics.
Well, they're mixing stuff together because prison and the governor are two separate ones, if I recall from Peter's conversations. There are separate storylines that they've put together as one storyline.
Yeah, they have.
All right. So, thumbs up for Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Next up, let's talk about The Mentalist. We haven't talked about that in a while, but since this was a Red John episode, I feel like it deserves a little conversation.
Yeah, this one was pretty good. In fact, I've always been more of a, I'm kind of a shipper for Jane and Lisbon, but, you know, I kind of saw an attraction and a chemistry here with, is it Lorelai? Is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, you know, I wouldn't mind if they actually had a real relationship, not like the scam one that it was before. I kind of like that they're both kind of scam artists and like.
Well, that's why you can't trust them.
But that's why I think they make a good match in a weird way.
Except that I don't believe either one of them. That's the problem. Like, you were like, oh, I saw them being romantic. I was like, I saw them playing each other. So I don't believe for a second that Jane feels anything for her. That's
I don't know. I'm not sure.
You have to remember, Jane is a sociopath.
I know.
Once you remember that, then almost everything he does is to convince other people that he's sincere, but you as a viewer know that he's not. That the only person he's ever sacrificed anything for that we've seen is Lisbon. That's it. I don't believe he would sacrifice anything for Lorelai. He would sacrifice to get information from her, but that's it. That's my personal. So I'm not. I see what you're saying, but he did get her to think. That's the cool thing. Like, he found out this information about her sister's death that is going to get her to think and probably get her killed by Red John. But it'll get her to think as well.
Well, I'm thinking she's going to get... Yeah, I think that too. But even though... Still, overall, I mean, yeah, that was by far one of the better episodes this season. Because, yeah, it dealt with Red John, and it's mostly Jane just with one character. And, like, yeah, that was good.
But what was interesting, did you think that Lisbon didn't know what was going on? Because she really played stupid. For most of the episode.
I thought originally she did, but then as it all came down, I was like, oh, maybe she didn't. Like, because I thought she did originally.
Well, then at the end shot, she very clearly tells him that she knew. Remember?
Oh, you're right. Yes.
In the last shot, she's like, yeah, I totally knew what you were doing. And he goes, you couldn't prove a thing.
right.
I was like she was going to arrest you. But the thing that's interesting is how much Jane is managing to corrupt her. Because she was very much a by-the-book cop. And now she's very much not. She lets him get away with really ridiculous things. And I don't know. I am a shipper, unfortunately. I think it's going to end badly for them. But I do really like Jane and Lisbon. And it's just going to blow up and it's going to be awful. But it doesn't matter. It's that train wreck you got to watch. So, thumbs up for Mentalist this week. I can't wait. I'm really... Oh, one quick question I have. Do you think that guy they keep showing from Homeland Security is Red John?
The guy from Fringe.
They keep insinuating that he is.
It'd be interesting if it is him because then we've seen him. And then, of course, Lorelai says... Something about you. What did she say? Like the moment you guys shook hands.
Yeah, she said, "Yeah, the moment you guys shook hands, and you should have been best friends." But
so I keep wondering that. But then I keep thinking it's too obvious. I'm like, "Well, no, that's too obvious." Like,
I also think it's a possibility that it's Styles, because he's known Styles for much longer, and they are closer to being frenemies than anything else.
True, that's true,
and they are very similar.
And of course, Malcolm McDowell is more that kind of actor is more like, of course, he. The big bad, like that makes more sense, you know. So, but I don't know. Honestly, at this point, I'm not sure. You know, I'm willing to go either way.
I feel like this season they need to reveal who Red John is. I really do. And then it's about maybe he can't prove that it's Red John, or he can't get to him, or whatever. But I feel like you really need to show who he is this season. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right, I agree.
All right, next up, we'll talk about Castle.
This was a fun episode.
Boo! No, I'm just kidding. I'm just doing that. I don't. I've always, you know, as listeners know, I've seen the pilot of Castle and I actually liked it. For some reason, I love ragging on this team, on the TV Campfire team. So please continue.
It was a fun episode where they're on the lam trying to protect a witness,
right?
And then they have a fourth act twist that the witness is actually the bad guy.
Did you see that twist coming?
I didn't.
I didn't either. But I feel like I should have. I felt like, oh, I'm an idiot, you know, but...
No, because they have you so invested in nothing's going right for them. It's right. Like,
so, except I call foul on they found a locked phone and they're like, oh, it's locked. What's the code? I was like, dude, you can always dial 911 on a locked phone. Like, even on a locked phone, it will allow you...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it will allow... Because if you try to unlock it and it doesn't work and it was like, would you like to call 911? And that's the only option it'll let you do.
Oh, interesting.
So I was kind of like, foul.
Party foul on the writers.
Yeah, because that was like a big part of the story was them trying to figure out the code to unlock the phone. Though I did like the fact that she remotely disabled the phone.
She bricked the phone. It's like, it was like an ad. This program has been subsidized by Apple Incorporated.
But what was awesome is like, they just figured out what the code was. It's like, oh, the code is the Kef Daemonis. And the phone is dead. So that was pretty good.
I also liked, it was good to see her mom. Why can't I think of her name?
Mom?
Stana Katic's, not mom, dad.
Dad, yeah, I was going to say her.
It was...
Because they did the parents' dinner.
They did the meet the parents thing that did not go well.
No, the parents hated each other.
Until the kids end up missing. And
then they're best friends.
Now they're besties.
Yeah, so that was pretty good. They actually had a real conversation. The problem was before they were trying to link over insubstantial things like baseball and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and either you're a baseball fan or you're not, and that's not enough to be mad at somebody about.
I loved when Martha called out Gates on being a terrible liar.
What? When Martha said...
When Gates, the captain, tries to say that the
kids, they're all fine.
Blah, 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 and it's like, you are a terrible actor.
Yes, yes, I remember.
And if anybody knows terrible acting, it's Martha.
Any other thoughts? Neither one of you guys watched it. Boo to you as well. But I think that this episode was just a fun episode, and they actually had a twist that I didn't see coming. And it was also about their relationship, the fact that they kept worrying that their relationship was going to fail.
The brilliance of what they did this season is they skipped from the will they or won't they part to basically their Nick and Nora... why can't I think of it? The Thin Man, Nick and Nora Charles. They're a famous married cinematic couple. Johnny Depp was going to reboot it for the movie.
Yeah, yeah, The Thin Man, yes.
But
yes,
they skipped from the will they or won't they right into the they're a couple solving crimes together.
Right.
And they know how it works.
Right, and the thing is they have such a rhythm anyway that it totally works. And have you noticed since the premiere where you find them in bed in the premiere, after that we've never actually, I think, seen them kiss. For the rest of these episodes.
I haven't even noticed that.
Yes, exactly. They always talk about what they're going to do. That like, oh.
But we don't need to see it because we
know. They just don't show it. And so that way you don't get overly saturated with it. So I thought that was pretty good.
This could be a textbook example of how not to screw up your show by getting the leads together.
Yes.
And surviving for several more years.
I mean, I won't talk about Bones. Bones does it too, and it's okay on Bones, but I just find that show's just sort of boring anyway.
Evidently, people are breaking up with it on their DVRs.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they just went really far into the how gross can we go thing, and I just went, you know, really?
Yeah. That's what, I don't need a more gruesome murder.
Exactly.
And the show, I like that they got the two people together on their show. Except the only problem I have with them is they got them together only because Emily Deschanel got pregnant, and so they skipped from the will they or won't they to she's pregnant with his baby and let's get married. And
because
I was like,
because they slept together one night.
Yeah, but the one night they slept together, they didn't show us.
Yes.
So I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I think that's the worst way to get a couple together.
Wasn't that because she got really pregnant?
Yeah, she got pregnant.
She really got pregnant, so let's work it into the script. But not show the viewers anything.
Exactly. I think that was the worst way ever. But they have done them well as a couple.
After
they skipped all the good stuff, and she immediately was pregnant, and they immediately got married, and they're just like, what? But now that they're a married couple... They actually do a good job with them, so that's another show that's okay. But the rest of the show sucks. Anyway, sorry. That was my Bones rant. Next up, let's talk about Go On.
That was good. It was really good use of Lauren Graham.
Yeah. You're right.
Evidently, she and Matt Perry have been friends for a while, so.
I could see that. They have a chemistry. Yeah, I could see that.
It was fun to see her playing somebody not like either Lorelai Gilmore or Sarah.
She's a little like Lorelai Gilmore.
But not the mile-a-minute talking.
No. But the snarky. The snarkiness.
Well, the snarkiness. But yeah, other than that.
But I liked them as a couple because I was like, oh, if Parenthood ever goes away, she can just jump onto this show. So I like how they set it up that she could come back. So I like that.
I'm sure the doors are always open for her.
She was fantastic. And I like that both of the guys liked her and them fighting each other for her. She's like, what are you guys? We are fighting for you currently.
Like, but I like the resolution. It's something that we've talked about with Go On in the past. You're not ready yet. So,
right.
And I don't want to be the first one.
Because she's like, I've been waiting for a long time for you. She's like, I'm fine waiting a little longer. And I like the look. She's like, you've been waiting? She's like, yes. All right, let's just... So,
and the fact that
then she pulls out her phone with the song that they hate, and she's like, boom,
bop. You gotta wonder if Cameron Crowe...
I'm like, I gotta try that someday. That's awesome.
She said it doesn't, but it doesn't work as well without the big...
without the boombox. You gotta wonder if Cameron Crowe, who wrote Say Anything, these people will quote that a lot with the big boombox or the small iPhone.
Yes, he gets
that
credits.
Was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was. And then, of course, the crazy's over for dinner. Hey.
Oh, right. They kept wanting to question people, and just weirdness was happening. Because they
it
just
said,
no, it was great. Oh, the the what's that show? The Brady Bunch.
Oh, the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch thing.
That was great.
Oh, that was so funny. And the fact that he like went for it. And they had just 9 people, so it worked perfectly.
But I think the best joke in that riff was, you know, who do you want to be? I want to be Peter. It's like, low self-esteem. Go for Greg.
Oh, yeah. No, Brady Bunch thing was awesome.
Yeah, they really, she's like, oh, you're in the middle. That makes me whatever. You're the middle row. And I'm like,
you're not doing this.
And I see the Brady Bunch, but obviously I don't know it as well as these guys do. Because I was like, what? Like, I don't remember who's in the middle.
I know, Alice, but wasn't Alice in there?
Alice somewhere? Is in the middle.
Yeah, the maid is in the middle. But then, of course, credit to the show, because it's a comedy, but it's like it's a clever comedy, and it's always got that little heartwarming bit somewhere in it, and yes, I think they always play that off really well. Like, they never go super sappy on stuff, and so I liked how this one, it was just that really nice, simple couple minutes at the table with, I forget the black kid's name, I feel so bad.
Chris, but from Everybody Hates Chris.
Yeah, exactly. He's so good. I love him. And his mom. And, you know, the mom we know
mom
is
crazy.
Kind of scary.
Yeah, and she was funny.
So for her to, you know, and she's ragging on the instructor, their therapist all this time. And then finally at the end, she's like, oh, well, okay. If this is where you got him to, then thank you. I'm like, there. That was cool.
Yeah. That he stood up to his mom. I want to be with my friends. I was like, the fact that he is a grown man and he's not allowed to tell his mom that he wants to hang out with his friends is, yeah.
I like the same character and the Asian woman.
Oh, playing the cello.
Talking about their tiger moms.
Your mom didn't treat you hard enough. Didn't work you hard enough.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that she first says it, she's like, oh, you have a tiger mom too? And he's like, no. She's like, you know, and he's like, I'm nothing like you. And she's like, so what stringed instrument did she make you learn? He's like, cello. She's like, yeah, me too. So well played again. For a simple comedy, I think they do just a really good job still. Very steady.
Yes, I agree. Thumbs up!
Thumbs up.
All right, next up, let's talk about Vegas.
This was an interesting episode, and they had some plot twists I didn't see coming, namely that end. It's like, yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, you knew he wasn't going to die. Like, that
no,
was...
well, we knew he wasn't going to die, but we didn't know what was going to happen.
That's true. Like... But I thought that the whole episode leading up to the two of them... Dennis Quaid and Chiklis.
Lam and Savino.
Thank you. Character names. They actually hung out together for half the episode.
Oh, dude, that dinner time table. I wanted to smack him. He was being such a...
Well, he was being a jerk deliberately to bait him.
He was baiting him, but still, right. You don't go there.
Yeah.
That's just...
Well, he didn't know what happened to the wife.
No, but he kept going. Yeah, he kept going. I mean, just to... You know, when he says, you ever think that if you had done something better, you would be with her instead of me eating dinner?
Well,
he was just like, boom!
Yeah, but he didn't know. But I think if he had known what happened to his wife, he wouldn't have gone there. Because when he got to, when he actually found out what happened to the wife, he was like, oh, sorry. Like, he totally backed down. So, it's not like I think the two of them are going to be best friends anytime. But watching them in a room together, just playing off each other, is always interesting. And the wife... I was surprised that the wife stayed.
Savino's wife?
Savino's wife.
They need her as an obstacle with all this romantic...
tension with all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But I liked the wife. Like, this was the first episode that I liked Savino's wife. Because there was that moment where she realizes, like, when the guy's like, oh, we got to take you somewhere. And the look on his face is like, holy crap, they're about to kill me. And so, like, he realizes it.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 10 seconds later, his wife realizes it. And she doesn't want him to leave, but he knows that if he puts up a fight, they're going to kill the wife, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's just like, all right, fine, I'll leave. And he just, you know, for a mobster, I guess he figured that at some point he might be taken out to the field and getting a bullet in his head. And he took it very well. I thought he was going to do something to fight, but he was just like, just bury me deep. I don't want my kids to read about it on the news. And I was like, wow, all right. Mobsters are hardcore.
At least back then they were.
I was like, all right. And then, of course, the cool twist is, I don't even know what that dude's name is.
Her dad.
Yeah, the banker's dad.
Or the, you know, financial woman's dad.
He decides he's going to take over the whole organization and kills the guy from...
From Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad.
Banks. Yeah. He made a new career of dying on one-hour dramas.
Dying as a gangster, even.
Dying as a gangster.
So he took a bullet to the back of the head. But they're like, he got too soft. Like, okay. But I actually think that that's better for Savino, because Savino did respect the Banks guy, and this new, he doesn't respect him at all. No. So he won't have any problem going up against him.
Well, it's interesting to me because it looked like he, him and the daughter were going to plot against the father, but now he owes his life to his to the father.
But not really. I don't think he feels indebted. Because the only reason that guy did that was to grab power. It had nothing to do with him.
But still, you can, he'll use that to lord, you know, his power and control over to Savino. I think what's going to end up happening is the daughter is going to be the one who literally backstabs him. Well, right. Not literally, but...
Well, maybe literally.
We never know. Yeah, this show, it's interesting. I was doing a little bit of research on the real Ralph Lamb. If they follow the trajectory of real life, I don't know if you've heard, but basically...
No spoilers!
Okay, well...
I don't want to know.
Basically, if you Google the real Ralph Lamb, it would have some real ramifications if the series follows that trajectory long term.
Yes, I don't want to know. I guess it can't be spoilers for real life, but I didn't know it, so I don't want to know now.
What? This was a real person? But this show, Dennis Quaid is doing that gravelly voice thing. I don't know if it's he's got a cold or just...
I don't think it's deliberate. I think it's
old man voice?
Yeah, I think it's old man voice.
I did like when the son does something good and the uncle says, oh, the boy's got a talent for this. And then Quaid shoots back, at least one of you does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're really trying to play up the fact that they're all family and make you feel that they, you know, have a relationship. So it's okay.
Trying to do that 60s Blue Bloods thing.
Yeah, Blue Bloods does it a little better. I really feel like they are a family. These guys, I'm not sure how I feel about them yet. But all right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about Parenthood. And when I say we, I mean Peter and Tom.
Oh, such an emotional episode. Every episode of... I have to finally admit that I think Parenthood's one of my favorite shows. I tend to think of myself as a sitcom person or a sci-fi fantasy person, but every episode of Parenthood, I can't wait to watch, and every episode always makes me cry. Like, I'm always just like, oh, like...
You're such a softie.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, and one of my favorite parts was actually a small thing, but it was, and I'm going to sound terrible, because I'm so bad with character names, but when the little girl decides she wants to run away...
Sydney?
Yeah, that was fantastic, because you can kind of see her point, because it's like she feels like she's being, you know, she's you know, she was there first, and they've just adopted this new child who's older than her, you know, but I liked how the mom... Because the dad is like, oh, you know, maybe we should take her out for ice cream or go ice skating with her. And the mom is like, oh, so you fell for that? Like, but I thought that, but I don't know, I could see both ways, you know?
See, I wanted her to get a spanking for being a brat.
See, yeah, but I don't know, it would be, come on, it would be hard. It'd be, yes, you got to learn to love your sibling, but I mean, that would be hard for her, you know? Kids are, even though kids aren't necessarily as extreme as the one that Peter Krause has.
Max. Yeah, I love this show also, and I think that this Christina's cancer storyline, it reminds me of 30-something. Once they gave the main character, one of the wives, cancer on that, the show got really good. The problem I have is with how they're doing with the Max storyline. They're not... He should be getting some good... I hate to say training... But he should be... He
getting
is at
better?
The, yeah. He is at the same point in season 4 as he was in season 1. And my oldest godson, they don't even diagnose Asperger's anymore. It's high-functioning autism. But we should be seeing some real progress there, and they're not. And that is driving me insane. Because
they hired somebody to train
him. Yeah, well, they had...
Well, actually, but the very fact that he was able to do the election, I thought that kind of showed some changes and stuff.
Yeah,
and trying to learn how to have a dog.
But in terms...
It's not black and, you know, it's not a night and day, but I think he's got some changes.
I'm not asking for night and day, but he's still prone to having these little hissy fits. And I'd like to find somebody in the writing staff and say, you need to do your research a little bit better. Because my godson, when he was a certain age, like when Max started the show, he would have these huge knockdown, drag-out, blowout, he would do that. And he grew out of them. It wasn't overnight, but in 4 years from a diagnosis, you should see some positive change. A little bit more than just, you know, getting your friends who like sugary snacks to want to vote for you for student body president.
Although I will say, just as a thing to our listeners, none of us, including Tom, are experts on
what is a disclaimer now?
Tom, that might be your experience with your relative, and that's great, but I mean, I have no idea how many different variations and person to person it is, you know?
We're getting off topic. Get back to topic, please.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel real in the show. It feels like they're writing him like this because they need him to be an obstacle for whatever Christina.
I see what you're saying there, and I'm okay with it, but I can see that as a valid criticism. But do you still like the show?
Oh, no, I love the show. And the stuff with Ryan, the Iraq War veteran, and Amber, I mean, I've liked that kid since Friday Night Lights and Chicago Code.
Oh, he's great. He's great.
And
yeah,
that whole thing, and just the fact that she realizes he's got issues, but she's willing to stick by him, which is what Zeke was worried about. And Zeke, I thought they played everything about that arc just right. I mean, there's so many good things about Parenthood that, you know, my few qualms that, you know, I'd like to lock the two bratty kids up and let them destroy each other. But no, thumbs up. Unfortunately, there's no possibility of getting a longer season because when the season ends early in January, Smash is getting the time slot. So,
boo! I'm booing for you. All right, let's wrap that up. So, two thumbs up for Parenthood. Yes?
And it's holding strong in the Nielsens, too. All
right, so next up, we're going to talk about a show called The Wedding Band, which I've never heard of. So, please entertain me and convince me to watch this show.
Okay, Tom, do you want to go first?
You go first.
Okay, I've only seen the first two episodes. There was one last night I missed, but so far steady, so far so good. For those of us who like Go On, this is, in my opinion, this is kind of similar in tone, but longer because it's a comedy as well, but it's actually a strange length of time. It's not quite a full hour, it seems, but it's longer than half hour.
It's a full hour.
Is it a full? Okay, because the timing on it seems kind of weird, though, when I look at it.
With commercials, it's an hour.
Okay, they must have different commercials on. Is it TN?
It's TBS.
Okay, then they're the ones. I think it's because they have different commercial times and breaks. But anyway, it's basically the premise is Brian Austin Green. He's this guy, Tommy, and he leads a wedding band. And they actually are a good band, you know, the people that you hire to play at weddings and bar mitzvahs and birthdays and stuff like that. And what's funny is that the show doesn't take that as a kind of a comic step. They actually are serious as performers, and the songs are good and they play them well. I was actually like, hey, they're actually pretty good. And I need to Google and see if Brian Austin Green is actually singing at all. But so their premises are good. They have their guitar, the drummer is like their version of kind of like the Jack Black, you know, mm-hmm. Zach Galifianakis character. and they've got, you know, the bass player and the lead guitarist. You know, the lead guitarist, I think, married with two kids. And so they've got, you know, all the different players with their different dramas and everything. But
the newest person is the guy, Harold Perrineau.
Derek Miller? Is that who it is?
Harold Perrineau, who played Michael on Lost.
Yes, thank you. That's it.
Is the violin player.
And we find out later that he's, like, is he the one that we find out is, like, the, he's the professional musician, I guess.
Yeah, he's a session musician.
Yeah, so they go to his place for the first time, and they're like, "Wow, this is like a real studio." But they're great. So that's kind of the premise there. And then there's this, and they're doing really well. They're pretty successful. But there's this company called Rutherford, which is really the big name that you want to work for in terms of wedding planning and getting booked for big gigs at expensive hotels and conventions. And so it's really the crazy woman, you know, the kind of the sexy, you know, in love with everyone kind of woman that is running the show for Rutherford, the agency or whatever. So it's kind of the premise is these guys, you know, want to work for her agency and so they can get the expensive gigs. But along the way, you know, it's one of those here's the episode of the week thing, you know. And so the first episode, I think the pilot was his ex-girl, you know, Tommy, Brian Austin Green's, his ex-girlfriend is getting married. So, you know, this whole thing, and did he break it up? Did she not? You know, so there's a lot of comedy in there, you know, but there's the drama and the relationships they build. But it's funny, it reminds me of like Go On and Modern Family. So it's not like the really cheeky, cheesy, you know, just do it for laughs comedy. They actually set it up really well. And again, since they're serious musicians and they play well, you can take them seriously. And there have been some funny episodes. Like the second episode, I think Tom is the one, right, where they had the college kids and like the
High school kids.
The high school kids. Who and the whole thing about the science fiction show that they were watching, and his Brian's wife. What's her name? Really hot woman.
Megan Fox.
Megan Fox, right? So she's in it, she gets to play this one character. You know, that's like the science fiction dream for all the fanboys. And that whole episode was really well done. You know, they have this whole party, and they want the two nerds of the school who like the two girls in class, you know, don't get anywhere. And so they're like, all right, well, we're going to play for your party. We're going to have this huge party at the guy's house, you know, the rich kid's house, and basically have everyone think that they're drinking. And they just replace – it's like non-alcoholic beer that they serve all the kids. They're like – all the Jell-O shots are like totally just Jell-O.
they're Jell-O
shots. And the kids all think they're getting drunk. It's like this giant placebo effect. Everyone thinks they're at this raging party, and these two nerds are like really popular at the end. It was really cute, like the way they played that out. So I think it's thumbs up so far. I haven't seen last night's, but Tom, it sounds like it was pretty good as well. So
yeah, the thing about the show that's interesting is when I first saw it, I'm like, okay, it's like The Wedding Singer meets Wedding Crashers. And then after watching the first bunch of episodes, it's like, oh my gosh, it's Men of a Certain Age thrown in there.
It is, exactly.
But
it's
enjoyable, unlike Men of a Certain Age, which I hated, and I'm of that certain age.
All right.
Yeah. And I'm not even a man, and I enjoyed it.
So yeah. So wrapping up, good. Okay. Yes. Wrapping up, thumbs up, right?
Thumbs up.
Yeah, you should try and find it, definitely.
TBS. All right,
next up, we're going to talk about The Mindy Project, which is a show that I just started watching. Because it's funny, Peter is always telling me to watch these comedies, and I'm always like, eh. And then finally, I was working, and I put it on Hulu, and they had all the episodes, including the pilot, and I was just like, play. And they just played through the whole season, for this season at least. And I found that I liked it. I was like, oh, okay. I like Mindy.
Peter? I agree, although this episode was okay because they do the cardinal sin for me, which you don't want to do in a sitcom, is you take them out of their environment. Because it was a Thanksgiving episode.
Right, and I agree. It was like, of course, I had just finished telling Peter how much I liked The Mindy Project, and it was like, oh, we can talk about it in the podcast. I was like, okay, and we were like, let's watch the Thanksgiving one. And of course, it's probably like the worst one that they've had.
Yeah, and I was like, this episode was all right. But the club episode was fantastic. That's the one that really made me go, oh, this is a good show. I totally like it and everything. I didn't even
mind the gynecologist episode, such as my gynecologist.
But that comes after.
Yeah, so, I know, but I'm saying I even liked that one because it became a competition between.
Sitcoms are good at having characters go against each other, especially once you know their traits.
Right.
Although it's a little harder because this show's brand new. But no, I agree. This episode was all right, but I definitely like the show. I like her. There's something about the way, like, even in the beginning of this episode, I think when, like, she's basically, the premise is that she's kind of jealous that the guy that she wants to be with exclusively, isn't he going to a strip club or something like that?
Well, he's going on a road trip with a bunch of basketball players, and she wants him to say before he goes on this trip that they're exclusive so he doesn't sleep with all these other women that she knows are going to be around all the basketball players.
Right, and
he's unwilling to say that. He's like, how about when I get back? And she's like, yes, would you get back with a bunch of nasty venereal diseases? No, then I won't want you anymore. So,
and then I liked when, I liked how, whatchamacallit, I liked how fans of The Office, because obviously Mindy Kaling is from The Office, the guy who plays Andy Bernard, Tom, what's his name?
Oh, geez. I'm blanking on it. Ed Helms.
He basically plays this guy that she really always had a thing for. So she decides she's going to, like, go for it. And then, like, her best friend, like, all gets in her face about it. Like, that was actually, that part was...
Well, the best part is that he ends up dating a girl that's, like, her younger, better-looking version of herself.
Oh, right! Yeah, it's like... Right, because Mindy's like, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? Like, and their friend's like, I'm saying you're perfect, but, that was pretty good. I forgot about that. Yeah. Oh, because what is she? Yeah, I forgot what the.
Oh, she's like, the other girl was like, oh, us brown people need to stick together. She's like, yes, us 1 billion brown people need to stick together.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, like that was pretty funny. Like that, even though the Thanksgiving episode was probably the weakest one, they had some really good, funny moments.
Yeah, I like the show. And then they also, they did a weird thing where they took the guy who's in everything, the guy from Newsroom, the guy that's basically her love interest, the gynecologist.
Oh, right.
Oh,
they put him by himself.
Which was weird.
At first, I was like, oh, this is kind of a funny idea, because he can't really complain to anybody. I was like, he's stuck by himself, but it actually wasn't that funny. Like, I applaud them for trying it, but I was like, it wasn't really that great, you know, so.
Yeah, I didn't, because they were like, his whole thing is because he's a jerk, he has nobody to spend Thanksgiving with, and part of it is he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to be happy with their, you know, family and stuff like that, so he stays in the office by himself.
Right, he's happy at first. At first he's like, aha, this is great, and everything.
Yeah,
right.
But then he's like, I'm lonely and sad.
Right.
And then
but thumbs up. I mean, I definitely like the show.
Yes. You know, so. And it's a new show that I've just started watching, and I think that I need to, what night does it come on? Because I haven't put it on my TiVo yet.
You know, Tuesday. I was wondering it too. Oh. It's on my Hulu is how I watch it. It's either Tuesday or Wednesday.
It's Tuesday with New Girl.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Okay, so I shouldn't, well, as long as it doesn't come up against NCIS or Vegas, it should be fine.
No, it's at 9.
All right.
Actually, it might be again. No, it's New Girl's against Go On.
All right, so, yeah, I should be able to set my TiVo for that. I think I like it.
Chris Messina is that actually.
All right, so let's wrap that up. It looks like we finished the podcast under an hour. Look at that.
You need to talk about NCIS.
I know, because I was the only one who watched it.
Oh, all right, never mind.
Which I thought it was awesome! Well, actually, no, I thought it was actually pandering, but a good cause, but it felt like, yes, it's a good cause, stop hitting me over the head. You
like
know.
The vets with PTSD.
Yes, it was just a little heavy-handed.
I watched the first 15 minutes since like.
It was a little heavy-handed.
It's very heavy-handed.
Okay. So I was like, yes, you could just put the CBS Cares at the end. I don't need the whole episode.
Oh, that was because I watched it on demand, and they had a thing in between the acts.
Well, yeah, they did. So, yeah, and they
did like a public service announcement.
They had a public service announcement. Actually, on the one I watched, they had the public service announcement at the end, and I was like. Seriously, you didn't need the public service announcement because the entire episode was a public service announcement. And I don't mind it if you do it in a subtle way, but it was really heavy-handed. So that's why I didn't talk about NCIS. Thank you for making me talk about NCIS. All right. So that's it for this week. If you have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, iTunes, and Weedonopolis. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.